Our high school guidance counselor used to ask us what you would do if you had $1 million, didn't have to work. And then invariably, whatever you'd say, that was supposed to be your career. So if you wanted to fix old cars, then you're supposed to be an auto mechanic.
So what did you say?
I never had an answer. I guess that's why I'm working at Initech.
No, you're working at Initech because that question is bull to begin with. If everyone listened to her, there'd be no janitors because no one would clean up if they had $1 million.
If I had $1 million. If I had $1 million.
Talking about millions of dollars.
What would you do if you had $1 million?
I'll tell you what I'd do, man. Two chicks at the same time, man.
We're living in a material world and I am a material girl. Or boy.
Well, what about you now? What would you do?
Besides two chicks at the same time?
Well, yeah.
Nothing.
Nothing, huh?
I would relax. I would sit on my ass all day. I would do nothing.
Well, you don't need $1 million to do nothing, man. Take a look at my cousin. He's broke, don't do
If I had $1 million.
Hello and welcome to Stacks and Jazz. I'm Tom Howell, Andrew on the board. SP Futures up 17, NASDAQ Futures up 31. So we've got a little buy the dip going here, because yesterday we ducked out on the close reasonably heavy. We were kind of up earlier in the day, and then all of a sudden we sold off later in the day. The S&P was down 30, NASDAQ was down 137, so we're getting back a little bit of that. We think, who do we have? We have John and Bill? Who do we have? We have nobody.
I'm here.
Bill, how are you?
Doing good, Tom. How about you?
Doing all right. Some traffic issues on the way in. You're missing the Chicago traffic, which, you know, is an education thing, but it's probably better that you're missing it. So this morning, the fight was going down Sheffield to grab Andrew. Now, there's nobody around. There's me, and then there's these two cars ahead of me. They dug out a big area by the stop sign to where, you know, they're going to fill it in with asphalt today. Must have been holes in it. Who the hell knows? So the automobile is maybe a 4-inch drop. So the automobile is going in there slowly, and the pickup truck behind him is outraged. So he flies around the guy, even though it's a stop sign, because he couldn't wait the 15 seconds or whatever the hell it was. And so then the guy in the car is all pissed off. He went around him, so they're chasing each other down Sheffield. This is at 5:45 in the morning, for God's sake. I'm like, can you guys get a grip? I mean, what are you doing? And off they went, you know? I'm like, this is the road rage, the whatever kind of rage that everybody seems to have buried in their soul these days. And it's, you know, kind of a strange world. Bill, I mean, I imagine you see some of that down in Austin, but I bet it's not as bad because there's not as many people. But maybe it is. Who knows?
No, people here are super sensitive to traffic, that even a little delay to them would be like the Eisenhower grinding to a halt for an hour. They just don't have the relative nature of traffic. You know, they're just down here, there's no real traffic problems to speak of, although there's, at times when they're constructing things, it gets bad at certain spots. But generally, you can get around this place. I can go from my house to the state capitol in 20 minutes, probably any time of the day. It's not a problem.
Is there a downtown where everybody allegedly works, or any kind of public transportation, or people work all over the place?
There is a downtown, which has turned into not only a place to work, but a place to live. Over the last 25 years, they've sprouted so many condo towers. They just keep going and going and going. These, 800 square foot boxes, and these kids live in them. Many of them don't even need cars, but they are trying to build a rail mass transit system, a very rudimentary one that they had a bond election on 4 years ago that got voted in. And there was one little problem with it, that the bond election, I think they said they could build the whole thing for $4 billion or $5 billion. And they got it through, and then after they got it through, the engineers started tidying up the estimate, said, I think we're a little closer to 12.
What? That's a spread.
So when it became 12, a lot of people said, we need to have that election over, and some people said, no, you don't do that. But it's, they don't really, the only mass transit that exists around here, there are some little segments of trains, but it's mostly buses. And I don't think I've ever been on one.
I scary as it may seem, the best surface transportation used to be L.A. And in the 50s, General Motors came out with some huge rigged study saying that buses were better, and they tore it all up. I think it was segregated right away. Now, what I mean by that is the Chicago's had a big streetcar system, but the streetcars were just they were rails like on the street, so the cars and the streetcars were kind of fighting for the same turf. But I think the LA one was you had two tracks in the middle, and they could go even if the cars were stopped, and that a separated system, a segregated system like that is gold. And are you guys talking about stuff in the streets like that? Or are you talking about the L here in Chicago? Or are you talking about regular trains? What are they talking about?
I don't think so much the L in Chicago. I think they will be in the streets. There was a portion of this main stem that basically goes from South Austin all the way through downtown Austin up to the state capitol, which is kind of connecting a lot of your work centers. A whole bunch of it was going to be in tunnel. And I think when they got to the $12 billion, some people said, do we really need a tunnel?
Yeah, what do you need a tunnel for?
Well, you take the transportation out of mixing it with cars. You know, it would just flow along on its own. When you get it mixed with cars, then it slows it all down.
That's what I mean. Why can't you be cars kind of... You ever been to like Amsterdam or those places that the trains run, but the cars... Trains were in the middle, and the cars were to the side, or whatever.
I think they were obviously with all of these pie in the sky things. The first plan is always a deluxe plan, and then when the cost estimators come in, we start to work it down to something less costly. So, but it's kind of not going anywhere. What I'm seeing, and I have nothing to do with it, but just reading in the paper, it doesn't seem like it's making leaps forward. But I'm sure they'll get there. The other big job around here is the interstate highway that goes through downtown Austin, I-35, which if you drove from San Antonio to Dallas, you would drive on I-35. And they've always had a two-deck system. And somebody decided that the reason the two decks were put in was to make a fence between the poor people and the rich people. So part of the job is now going to put everything at grade, which of course requires buying more land, and you know, this will be like a 10-year really big messy construction job. It hasn't started yet, but I expect that if you fly into Austin in a couple of years, stay away from it, because it'll be just an unbelievable mess.
It's sounds like the Dan Ryan separating some people from some people.
it has that look to it. Yeah,
And
you know, the other thing, we sent all of our legislators up to Chicago to hide out.
Yeah, they're welcome here, and it's so bizarre, you know. And you listen to both sides of it. That the guy in Texas says they have. Now, first of all, in this world, you know, without getting into politics, this world of you know, the clown show that we're seeing in terms of the law and everything. Since when can a governor issue a warrant for somebody's arrest? Do these people even care about the law anymore? Or do they just do what they want to do, led by their guy in the White House?
I don't know. It's pretty strange. And but I'll predict that we've had this before. A few years ago, they did something like this. And what usually happens is when it first starts out, everybody's gung-ho to go someplace. But after you're there, and remember, all these elected officials, they've got jobs, they got real estate offices, they got lawyer offices, they got financial services business, so it ain't super convenient for them to be hanging in Chicago.
Is this the Illinois model where those things are considered part-time jobs?
Yeah, they're kind of considered. They don't make very much. Their state pay is pretty, but they only go into session every 2 years, so a year and a half, you pretty much don't have to do much as a state legislature. But during the session, which had one this year from January to May, you're kind of tied up down there, fooling around with stuff. But the fact that what typically happens on this, because the Republicans will try to induce a few of them to come back, and break the strike. And they only need to get like five or six. So over time, and maybe this won't last that long, you'll start to see people sneaking back, and then all of a sudden the whole thing will blow up and they'll be right back.
Well, so they're going to, but I mean, the idea that this districting thing is so screwed up. In today's world, I mean, we used to have a gentleman, he ended up quitting the legislature. I don't know what the story was there, Bill. I suspect there was one, if you know what I mean, because he was like the second highest Republican in the state legislature. I won't even say his name, but he came on the show a couple times, and I of course started asking him questions like I normally do, like direct questions. Guess what he says to me? Well, it's 6 o'clock. If you want to play that way, I could play that way. Ask me anything you want, and he pretty much answered everything. You could basically figure nobody was listening or something. I don't know, but he ended up. He said on the show, he goes, "Well, the district thing." He goes, "It was such a solid Republican district. I think he was up by Bannockburn or someplace, somewhere up there." And he said, "It was such a Republican district that they actually took more Republicans out of the districts around him and stuffed them in his district." He goes, "I didn't." There wasn't even a guy who ran on the Democratic side. So they made me more secure while they're trying to screw the guys around me. Because they...
Yeah, we just think it's really funny that our escapee legislators have chosen Chicago to run to and to be safe.
Well, I mean, what... Why? How can you be arrested for that? I don't get it. I mean,
that's another good question. But the governor is kind of threatening that some way, yeah, that he can go nab them and stuff. And I think it'll play out over a couple of weeks. The session, the special session that they're in, ends in 2 weeks, and it could be that we just ride out 2 weeks, and then they come back. Governor calls another special session, and everybody says, "Well, we're tired of this camping in Chicago, so let's just."
Well, I mean, they've got enough, democracy can be a beautiful thing unless it's, you know, four wolves and a hen voting to see what they have for breakfast. I mean, these guys are going to go home and they're going to lose the vote. Well, okay, nobody is bitching whether it's Democrat or Republican of the overriding people in office, essentially doing the districting to get them even more people. I mean, to me, that's flat-ass wrong. I mean, I know the victor go to spoils, but to a limit, right?
I think the big issue is they're not supposed to do this except at certain times. They can't just pop up and do it in the middle of the decennial. So that's kind of the complaint. They've always done it every 10 years. They've never done it like this, and it seems like Trump's the one calling the shots, and yeah, it could go backwards on them too. You know, people could say we don't like the interference, but the state is dominate Republican. All the statewide offices are held by Republicans, so it's not like this is any big surprise.
Well, yeah, I was when I asked you, Ann, I don't want to sound like, read Greek tragedies. What did Socrates say? The next generation's a bunch of idiots or something. What are we going to do with the world? And well, that was a long time ago. And neither one of us are as smart as Socrates. But it seems to me that when I see some of these, a lot of, I don't want to use the term infrastructure, but products, projects, and stuff people are talking about at the level. And I'll use the three people that are, I'll use Johnson, I'll use Pritzker, and I'll use Trump. And I'm going to say that between the three of them, Pritzker may be a little better, I don't think they have a clue what the hell they're talking about when they come up with these projects. And the Pritzker, in the last 8 weeks, maybe it was a little longer for the first one, and yesterday he comes out with, around the weekend, a deal about, what do they call it, equine therapy for kids with autism and Augsburgers and those kinds of things. And I have seen some of that because one of the guys who was on the show, Tommy, I won't say his last name, has a son with a really bad Alzheimer's. What's the one the kids have? What, not Augsburgers, the other one. I keep forgetting the name of the damn thing. Autism. And they have a camp in the summer in Glen Ellen where the kids can go, and it's a lot of animals, ponies and stuff, and it's very effective. I mean, it is in hospitals for kids. You know, people bring their dogs in and so forth. I mean, I absolutely get it. But when somebody says insurance now has to pay for it, and I look around my neighborhood, which is a fairly, I mean, some people say Lincoln Park is, you know, a high-end neighborhood, but it's pretty nice. I look down the block, and I don't know, you know, if I saw a kid with, you know, one of these issues, where the hell are you going to get him to a horse? There isn't a horse within 20 miles. I mean, the logistics of any of this stuff, these guys, they don't care if they think it through. They don't. And the mayor will say stuff in the city here, and then the logistics are, he hasn't even thought it through. I mean, and Trump's the same way. I mean, when you talk about big projects, the thing that I want to ask you about, how does, even in good times, I mean, you look at, you know, past presidents, you know, guys like Lincoln kind of knew a lot about railroads. He was a lawyer for a railroad, and by the way, he worked on one. I mean, duh. Roosevelt was a high-end guy in the Navy. I mean, Eisenhower was an engineer, right, out of West Point. I mean, these are guys that had some clue about what they were talking about when they opened their pie hole. Right now, I mean, what if Chicago decided if they're going to grow again, they needed, you know, more electric, they need a better grid, they need this and that. Who, in any of these people, you look at the people in the city council, you look at the mayor, who there, Bill, could even understand what was needed? Put the right people together to form a plan. How did something like that even start? I mean, a few weeks ago we were talking, this is kind of the same question, even though it's different stuff. They just finished, the last nuclear facility, electrical facility, just finished, a couple years ago down in Georgia. And of course, Westinghouse was bankrupted by the whole thing. And now Westinghouse says they're willing to start 10 more in the next. And Trump signs this executive order, which doesn't do squat, even though he loves doing it, that we're going to have how many nuclear plants going in 7 years or something. How, if somebody wanted to put a nuclear plant somewhere in Illinois or any place, given the, I use the term bozos, we have in office, how the hell would that thing even get started? How would you get the right, what planning committee from the city or the state here would even have a chance to walk forward on that? They haven't done one of those things in 40 years. How do you even start something like that? How does somebody estimate it? How does somebody figure out where they're going to put it? How does somebody do the wiring and all the stuff to get to the place? These guys, they seem like they're way over their head, Bill. Is it just me or what?
I'm sure they're way over their head, but for planning any kind of big infrastructure project, if the agency responsible for it doesn't have the kind of people to plan and guide because they haven't done a facility in a long time, you can certainly buy those people off the street. I mean, there's lots of consulting companies that will come in with top-notch people and figure out how much power you need, what's the best place to locate the facility, what's the minimal environmental disturbance, go through the whole thing A through Z.
But now you've burned up your whole budget, right?
Well, I'm not saying anything's cheap, and to go into anything like that with the idea it's going to be cheap is a fatal flaw. You got to have a lot of money and have a lot of resources, a lot of deep resources, and a lot of time, because nothing's going to happen quickly. It's just going to take, you know, years and decades, and if you sort of underestimate that, you're sort of doing yourself a disservice, and you're just going to look stupid.
But well, the water, you were involved in, your biggest projects were in water treatment plants, right?
Right.
What was this somebody's idea to the thing being done then, and is the time going, is it longer now, less? I mean, because they put some up, we should have some expertise. How is that developed? And you keep saying, and a few times you're on, there are people like this, but they must be busy, Bill. What are they doing all day? I mean, I look around here in Chicago, every job has like five people working on it. It seems like they're stretched so thin.
I don't disagree, but there are people available. There, you know, the whole business of the consulting engineering world. When I worked in downtown Chicago, a really big engineering company in the United States of America was 1,000 people. And now a really big engineering company in America is 50,000 people, so it's times 50. because they're not all, and they're all international, they're all big, and they all have experts, you know, for all kinds of, they're ready for anything, you know, some project in Egypt, some project in China, whatever. So there's lots of resources, and I think things do take longer than they used to. A lot of the work that I did, if I think back, was under federal order because people were polluting. And that's actually a really good way to do stuff, because you don't waste any time, because if you were to not meet deadlines, there would be significant fines and penalties. So the owners typically stayed out of it. You know, they said, okay, we're not going to mess around with this. We're going to let you guys go to work and get this done. And if you don't get it done, it's going to be your fault. So we would typically, you know, burn the midnight oil and get things done. And so I think anytime nowadays, if you're planning anything, it's taking longer. I think the environmental constraints by nature have just gotten more complex. You have a more significant activist population who are ready to sue you. So you got to go into these deals with the idea, I'm going to be sued over something, and which could hang the thing up in the courts for a couple of years, you know, trying to get a decision out of the court to proceed. So it's definitely more complicated.
But who makes the call if you have people that, I'm going to say people that are not only, they don't know a whole hell of a lot, are also unwilling to learn and unwilling to study. I mean, I'm thinking about three people on top of my head. I won't say the names again. That if you handed them a big study, they have no intention of reading it. I mean, I think it's that bad with the people I'm talking about. Maybe Pritzker a little different, but. But who, if you decide, okay, Chicago needs X number more power because we took down the three coal-fired plants. I'm sure you know about that. And they didn't want to pony up to make them the pollution in today's world, so they just took them down. So if the city were to come back to having the manufacturing that they used to have, which they're never going to do, but say 30% of it, I got to believe we're power short a little bit, especially since. You know, everybody's got air conditioners now, and 40 years ago, people didn't. So who decides whether we're going to put some massive nuclear facility in, we're going to put five of these little gas-powered things around, we're going to try and upgrade the lines from North Dakota or Indiana and try and get a little more renewable? Who is capable of deciding all the different alternatives, which ones they're going to do?
Yeah, that would be the electric utility. They're managers who are responsible for providing the power at the right quantity. And obviously, a lot of those people are appointed by elected officials. So if the elected officials appoint people don't know what they're doing, well, they're sabotaging themselves. But let's assume they appoint people that know what they're doing. And if somebody were to tell me, hey, we're going to be bringing back a lot of manufacturing in Chicago, or we're going to put a data center in downtown Chicago, we need more electricity, let's get hopping and figuring out a plan on how to do this quickly. And that shouldn't be that hard to do. Shouldn't be impossible at all. But if it's a bunch of people that know what they're doing, then I think you just get stuck in a, you know, circular thing.
Well, because the issue I have with the electrical utility is, by the way, it's Commonwealth Edison, right? They got people going to jail there for bribing people. And yet the company seems to be fine, and all the rate increases that the bribing people got through are still there, and we're still paying it. You know, so I sort of have an issue with the governmental utility bond is an understatement, if you follow my drift.
So are we saying maybe the bribes did some good
for them? I mean, you know, one of the things, one of these days, because you're a little more politically savvy than you let on, I keep trying to ask the question, if you start passing money around, at what level, what do you get? You know, anyway, but I mean, if you look at the electric stuff here, for a little bit I know about it, and we talk about it with Carl sometimes, you could, so evidently there's massive amounts of wind farms up in Dakota or some damn place. Well, the lines from Dakota to here, or actually don't go to here, don't they go to the next grid and then You put money, your stuff into that grid, then maybe that filters over the next grid. I mean, you're not gonna make a line from South Dakota to Chicago, right? I mean, you're not gonna do that, I don't think. But now, the upgrade of those lines, because you know the old wire from 100 years ago had a lot of resistance to it, right? Now some of the new stuff is way better, right? Is it colder? I mean, I don't know the engineering of it. Well, Commonwealth Edison has zero interest in ponying up for the grid in Wisconsin that they can tap into if it's cheaper. Why they don't want to pay for anything like that. So when you say the utility companies, a lot of how this whole grid thing gets together, they're fighting among each other, right? So, I mean, in Indiana, you go down there, I mean, if you've been up there in a while, but somewhere around Purdue, Bill, I have no idea why there seems to be wind there or something, because there's no mountains or anything. There's massive amounts of these huge windmills. And when you go by there, one day it was pretty breezy, and it's kind of a warm day, and I'm going, gee, half of these things aren't even turning. What the hell's going on? And so I get back to Chicago, and my buddy, I haven't seen him in a long time, it's really since before COVID, but the lady who bartends at the Tripoli on Sunday, when I was like a couple of kids, her dad graduated with me at Notre Dame, and he was the left tackle on the championship team. So her husband is this really nice guy, and he's a high-end guy, a high wire dude for you know, just guy's built like a brick bleep house, and but he's been doing that and does well, and when there's a hurricane, he goes down and helps out, that kind of thing. He's telling me, well, the grid can't handle it. Commonwealth Edison doesn't want it. And I go, what do you mean? He goes, yeah, they have enough of their own power, so even though you would think that's exactly when you want to use the windmill power on a warm day, they don't want it. They're not going to buy it from them because they got their own thing running here. And so it's amazingly complicated. Maybe the wires, you know, there's enough power in the grid in Indiana, and maybe the guys in Illinois decide they want to grab some from Wisconsin and not here. He goes, it's this huge choreograph. And he goes, sometimes even though the power is essentially, your variable cost is zero, right, because you got the windmill sitting there. They're burning gas somewhere else because that's theirs and this is somebody else. So, I mean, who puts all that together, Bill?
That would be part of a feasibility study to look at external providers, you know, how they could fit in, what it would cost, what the advisability of doing that would be. Typically, and I'll speak more from the water side, but there are some analogous type things. You know, when you go buy a resource from a neighbor competitor, they're usually going to hurt you on the price pretty bad. So it's not going to be the cheapest deal unless they have some surplus and it's absolutely laying there and you can get some kind of a term deal. But that's the type of thing that prudent utility managers do. They look at, you know, where I can get, in this case, electrical energy cheaper, easier, how to do it, what it costs, run lines, etc. And it's not, I wouldn't describe it as anything magical.
Well, how do you run a line other than where the lines already are? You can never get one to go in anybody else's backyard, can you?
Well, you can go down public right away. I mean, that's done every day of the week.
Okay.
So they just have to find it, or put it aerially across, and you know, in some cases, there's already an aerial route that you can attach to.
Well, that's what I'm saying. You get these aerial routes coming in and out of Chicago. You'd have to stay in the same one. You couldn't find a new one, could you? I don't think.
You might be able to go next to it. You know, you have to look at how much land they bought and you know what they have for all that. But I would describe that as a relatively straightforward problem.
Well, now, when you mentioned last time you ran the water issues down by you guys, which appears to be some of the bigger issues, who's the driving force behind the desalination plant? Is that a state money? Is that federal money? Is it a bunch of municipalities getting together? I mean, who choreographs that whole project?
Well, the biggest one that's going on right now is with the city of Corpus Christi. And they are, they're a city. Have you ever been down to Corpus Christi, Tom?
No, I have to come down and visit.
Yeah, it's
I assume it's on the Gulf.
A beach thing going, but it's also like The Beverly Hillbillies meet the beach with a lot of oil derricks and stuff.
Oh, God.
It's got a lot of industrial flavor to it. You know, they do a lot of plastics work. So the people are down there are very much oriented to jobs in that chemical market, petrochem market. So the city, which has grown a bit, like everything around here, was running out of water. And I don't think people minded that so much until new industries were coming in and saying, well, we need so much water to do what we're doing. And the city said, well, we only have enough for ourselves. And then this industry would say, well, we're going to go somewhere else. Well, Corpus Christi said, tell you what, we'll take all our buffer and we'll give it to you and we'll worry about ourselves later.
Really?
So they've sped off on a pretty high velocity project to build a desal facility. Fairly good size one, I think about 30 to 40 million gallons a day.
And I think what does that mean? How many houses are we talking?
Well, let's see. I don't know. Like a town like Austin, let's say a million people, you need about 130 million gallons a day. So you could say 30 million gallons a day would get you 250,000 people.
So you'd get Oak Lawn, Evergreen Park, and that whole section southwest.
Something. Yeah. And now they ran into court struggles where people complained in court that the facility would damage the environment. And what the issue they picked on was when you do desal, when you pull the salt out of the water, where do you go with the salt? And a lot of people just wanted to throw it into the bay. And the bay is a sensitive ecological system where a lot of people fish and harvest oysters and all kinds of stuff. So that community of Protect the Bay, they lawyered up and beat the shit out of this thing for a couple of years and basically got them to extend a line with the salt further out into the ocean. Seemed like I would have done that in the first place, not had pork fight, but so everything I know, this job is now sailing along under construction with some big contractors. So I'm going to say 2-3 years from now, that thing will get turned on. And then what I believe you will see dotted across the Gulf of Mexico in Texas is more of these type of facilities, especially when it gets demonstrated that this one works well, what the costs were, because there's vast regions of the state that need water, you know, principally the Rio Grande Valley, that all those series of communities down by the Rio Grande.
Does the Rio Grande have, when it gets to the end, it has like no water? It's like the Colorado.
Right. It's they rely on some deals with Mexico for some of their water that Mexico never gives them the water. It's been in a drought. It used to be a very heavily vegetable and orchard thing. A lot of that business is gone because there's just no water to put on anything. And again, I think there'll be more of these desal facilities. And what's going to help it too is the state, I've mentioned this in the past, has a large funding program that they're just getting off the ground that'll be $1 billion every year for 20 years to build this sort of thing. So I would imagine people in water crisis will be huddling to figure out what kind of project they need to do and how to get their hands on the money to pay for it. Because someone once told me it's always more fun to pay with other people's money.
Without a doubt. All right. But isn't it fair? I mean, we, you know, I won't say the conservative people, but in some of the engineers and some of the other people, you know, constantly flip their nose and their finger at the people who put the lawsuits in and have concerns about the environment. But I look at, you know, the project when we were Utes. Did he say Ute? The Alaskan pipeline. And when those guys just wanted to build that, and all of a sudden there was everybody talking about, you know, the mooses can't get over it or something, so there was all kinds of these areas where they had to go airborne, and there was animals could run under it, and all kinds of stuff that at the time, you know, to the oil companies seemed like total BS, right? So they ended up building it, and I'm going to say that the finished product got oil from where it was supposed to be to where it was supposed to go, and by and large protected a lot of the land and animals along the way, and the finished product was far superior to the one that was originally on the board, sort of due to people that were suing and everything else. I mean, it's not like they're suing about nothing. I mean, I don't think you really want to up these. You don't want to make the Great Salt Lake out of the bay there, do you? I mean, you don't. I don't think.
No, I think you're exactly right. My observation, when you have these projects like the Alaskan Pipeline or any of these others, typically the people doing them, and they're just these hard-driving people that have got a schedule, got a budget, and they don't give a shit. They're going to get it done. And they don't have time to listen to environmental theory. They don't have any appreciation for it, don't want to mess with it. And they think the more they play with it, the worse it gets. But there's probably a level that if you're a prudent operator, you sit down, you listen to the concerns about wildlife or fish life or whatever, and probably the things you end up needing to do are not that hard, not that bad, like running the pipe a little further into the bay, which they probably should have done in the first place, that you could avoid a lot of stuff. But everybody, you know, everybody lawyers up, everybody wants to make a fee, let's fight. That's just kind of the tango that they dance. But you're exactly right that most of these projects, not all of them, have benefited from people giving their input on what could be, you know, a real mess if they did something really bad.
Well, you look at the issue with the pipeline running through from the tar sands down to the Gulf, the one that was on again, off again, and Trump ended up, he wanted it on, and then Biden knocked it off, and it's interesting to me, Bill, maybe because you know, I had all those people at Pullman that were engineers, and I got friends like you that are engineers, but I always try and look more into the detail, and if you there's still, what did Hitler say, the great lie, 40%? There are still all kinds of people. What pipeline am I talking about? The one that got canned? It was going through Nebraska?
Right.
Whatever the name of the thing was. And if I say, well, you know, none of that oil was for the Midwest. And they go, what are you talking about? My gas would be cheaper. No, it wouldn't. That was tar sands oil that nobody wants. It's like got down to like $5 a barrel at the website because it's half sand, hence the name tar sands, and it was going to go to a couple specific refineries down on the Gulf Coast that used to do Venezuelan oil, that's the same crap, and refineries are set up for essentially one type of oil, and they wanted to get those. You know, it would have added to the amount of gasoline in the system. I'm not going to deny that, but it wasn't going to be a left turn to the one in Bolingbrook or the one in Whiting, right? It just wasn't going to do that. And by the way, it was totally Canadian oil. And it's sometimes it's scary how people don't have any of the details, but to this day, people are convinced that oil would be in the Midwest because that's what some idiot told them that they believe. And, you know, I don't know. I suspect, Bill, that the oil that they're talking about putting through there, and all, you know, and all the big complaint was if there was a rupture in the line, that somehow it was going to end up in the Ogallala Aquifer. Now, I'm sure you know, and way more than me, and most of the people who talk about this have no friggin' clue. If it wasn't for the Ogallala Aquifer, Oklahoma, Nebraska, and how many other states would be absolutely barren, right?
Including Texas.
Yeah, including. I mean, what is that? That's some. Underground water, like almost like ocean, isn't it?
It's a huge aquifer. It's been damaged by overpumping. Everybody, and for people in Texas where they hear about the oligarchy is in West Texas, El Paso. And they, you know, the way you harm aquifers, there's kind of two ways to harm them. Well,
first of all, what's an aquifer? We got to start from the beginning.
Underground water storage in a porous medium.
Just natural. I mean, it just is just
natural, yeah. And people typically put a well in. And again, if you're the first guy that puts the well in, everything works great. And when it gets to be more and more, the aquifer can't sustain itself, so the liquid level drops. So everybody has to go deeper and deeper and deeper. And then, of course, bigger people put bigger wells in the case of the Oligala, and they've driven the thing down so far that it's almost destroyed.
And the
you end up with unusual water quality problems. The same nice water that you were getting at 200 feet is not the same product you're getting at 1,000 feet.
Well, the first guy's well, is it now dry?
Yeah. Well, each guy, let's say, and again, there's about thousands of people around Austin could tell this story, where they went out into the hill country, built a little house and drilled a well. And then as more people came in and drilled their wells deeper, everybody pulls the aquifer level down to the point your well doesn't work anymore. So you go back out to your well driller and you say, I need to go down another 100 feet. So you pay that. And it kind of, it's a continuous round robin of people lowering wells. But it does get to a point, and we've seen this around here, where the wells flat don't work anymore. And so what those homeowners do is they truck in water. They make an arrangement with a water trucker who have these little 8,000-gallon trucks, and you have a tank on your house or your ranch, let's say, and once a week he brings in a load of water. And of course, when you're dealing with truck water, it's way more expensive, and you use it very preciously. You know, there's not any watering the grass at all. You know, showers are super short. And usually that kind of behavior goes on a while until it starts to rain again. But living in those groundwater dependent areas, that's a problem that you're always dealing with, is the aquifer is overpumped and it becomes less functional.
How does the water get back down in there?
It permeates down after rain. You know, there's certain, you know, if it rains a while, the aquifer level will come up.
I mean,
and to give
the
an
people,
example, the
city
of
know?
San Antonio has a thing called the Edwards Aquifer. It's a wonderful aquifer, very, very prolific. It's their water source. But they've depleted it to the point they had to go get all kinds of other water. And they were wrecking that. And people, you know, state legislature had to get in on that and slow that down and stop them from wrecking it. They would have wrecked it. But another way that groundwater wells get screwed up, if you're in a coastal situation, this happens in Florida a lot, where people start to pull ocean water into the well. So the game there is you back away from the coast. Like, let's say you have a well field, you're the city of Fort Lauderdale. I think this is a fairly true story. And you have a big municipal well field to fill your town. Well, some of the wells start to pull salt water. And then you know, uh-oh, we're in trouble. So they go back, try to find a new well field 20 miles further in. But groundwater is a precarious thing. It's kind of a tricky thing. And if it's not managed correctly, you could end up wasting a lot of money and getting in a lot of trouble.
Well, is it obvious, use the term, if it starts pouring in the Midwest, is it obvious how the water gets into the aquifer? I mean,
there's what they call recharge zones. And they're like certain areas where the ground is particularly porous, and they've got all kinds of gauges, and they can measure, and they know. You know, they don't let people pave over these recharge areas so that it does function. And
really?
I think they've done a pretty good job. But around here, there are swimming holes. There's one called Jacob's Well that everybody tells, oh, I used to take my grandchildren there, and oh, I used to go there as a kid. Well, the last 2 years, Jacob's Well is a dry hole. And I don't think it's ever been dry before that anyone can remember.
Wow.
But what we're seeing, the collision of too many people, not enough water.
Well, it's interesting that I think the area out by where Audrey's cousin used to live, who unfortunately passed, he's in, I think he was in Lamontville, and I think that it's all well water out there. I'm not positive. But if you have a swimming pool, you can't just put the hose in there and fill it up. You gotta buy water for the pool. I never heard of that. No, in the city here, I mean, if they want to clean the swimming pool at the club, they drain it, clean it, and fill it back up again. Nobody even thinks about it. But evidently, well, Lake Michigan's pretty big. But they would in the wintertime, you never. My instinct would be, okay, I want nice fresh water for the spring. No. You cover it, goes down a little bit, and in the spring you top it off and you put some chemicals in there and you use the water from the year before. I had never even heard of that, but evidently in these well water areas like you're talking about, they're very concerned about a swimming pool full of water.
Well, I think in my memory, having left Chicago in the early 80s, at the time there was a big push to convert a lot of suburbs that were on groundwater to surface water. And the one that I was involved in included Arlington Heights, Palatine, forget two or three others. And we built a massive line from the Evanston water treatment plant all across the northern suburbs to a facility and basically converted those four towns onto lake water. And then I know there was another big job to do like Elmhurst and all those communities, lake water. Anybody that can get lake water at some reasonable price would be smart to do it, because groundwater is very precarious.
Well, I mean, that's why, there's only one Lake Michigan, right? The rest of the country, which they wish they had one.
Right, and it used to be the Corps of Engineers wouldn't let them release to those suburbs, but they finally got that through back then. So that was a very wise move on those parts of those suburban communities to grab that water, because it's a permanent source, will never go anywhere, high quality, way better for everybody.
The lake has been so overfull for the last 10 years. I mean, nobody even thinks about it, but there have been times when it's been low and everybody bitches about it, right? People
right.
Taking too much water out. They used to, before they built the docks, the locks, the water used to fly out of there, right? And before there were the locks, it would just pour out of the lake and head down the sanitary and ship canal, correct?
Yeah, and I'm sure they manage that real careful, better than they used to.
Well, they manage it now because they have the locks, but I said before the locks were put in, it was like a 5-mile-an-hour current.
Right. I'm sure everybody's a lot smarter about that these days.
Well, when you have just a general question, not a political question. When you have the incredible rancor that you see in Washington, where one guy has an infrastructure bill, the next guy has 15 or 20 or 50 executive orders pulling half of it back, or something, are any of these the people working on these projects, are they looking over their shoulder all the time to see if the money's going to get pulled or not pulled? I mean, it seems like these kind of projects should be somewhat apolitical to a large extent. I mean, are they underneath this fighting rancor that stuff goes on that should go on, or is it reaching down to, from what you hear from your friends, to where I don't know if I want to bid on the next job or not or something?
Yeah, there's definitely a bit of that. With the major funding program in America for water and sewer is called State Revolving Fund. It's a federal EPA program. And Biden did a lot to put a lot of money in that. So for the last 4 years, we've been sailing along with pretty well uninterrupted funding. And we have one more year. This last funding cycle will be kind of it for a lot of that generous money. There'll still be money, but it won't be as much. So
what kind of projects are we talking about?
Expand a sewer plant, build a new water plant, build a water well, put a water line in from point A to point B, those kinds of things.
Does the state municipality have to match any of that, or is it all federal? But how does
they have to match part. Usually depends on their circumstances. They may get a portion of the money as a grant, and then the rest of it would be a subsidized loan. usually at like 2.5%, whereas if they went to the revenue bond market, it would be like 4%. So it's a pretty good deal. Everybody likes it.
When you say that, people charge separately for water. So if you got, you're talking about the one from Evanston to Elmhurst or whatever the hell it was, now the people there are going to be paying for that. So you could get a loan for that pipe that you guys just put in, and it could be paid off over time by it's a separate line item on your it's your water bill. It's not your tax bill, right? So these can be separate revenue agents that really can sort of pay for themselves, correct?
No question. That's how they do it. You know, they finance it. I don't recall how they did it back in the 80s. They could have used federal money, or they may have just used local funds. Usually the trade-off with the local funds, way less hoops, you can move faster. The federal funds might be a tad cheaper. But again, you're typically going to pay this thing off over 30 years, and if you really need the water, you're not going to care. Everybody's water rate's going to go up, but again, they usually start out so low. I mean, if you compare people's water rates to their cable television rates, it's ridiculous, you know? We complain about water, and your water bill is, what, $50 a month?
Well, a couple of Audrey's friends that have these house beautiful backyards and like water every day, they're pushing $400 or $500 Norland in the summer, and they don't
care.
Well,
that's a choice they're making. I'm sure that's a lot of money to put in the water. I wouldn't do it.
Well, some people still have, that's why a lot of people don't give up their old wells. They use it for watering plants and stuff.
Sure, they got a well they can irrigate and stay off of the water rates.
Did you make it to? We got a dash, but did you make it to Ireland this year or no?
I almost did, but I had a lot of family over there, and I ran into a little something that kept me home. But I got a lot of good reports.
Well, cool. But so you get an Airbnb house, or what do you do?
What I typically do is I rent a big house in Dingle, Ireland, a 6-bedroom house within walking distance to the town, and I usually, my brothers and sisters and nieces and nephews show up 2, 3, 4 at a time. We have a little thing that we did, we do the same kind of things every year, kind of go around, see the sights, and it's quite a nice place to visit. And
is it a good week for the local bar?
Oh, God, yeah.
why is that not?
When you say bar, I mean, this Dingle's a town of 1,500 people, and I think they've got like 50 pubs in it, so there's no...
Is there a favorite?
They're all pretty good, you know. They got a little music in them and stuff, and yeah, you can't go wrong.
So when the Moriarty family walks by, they run out and grab you by the neck and drag you in, or what?
They're not quite that bad, but pretty close.
Well, I love that. I find this stuff fascinating, Bill, because as a society, as much as we argue about God knows what, the simple fact is government is people getting together, electing people to say that we need all this stuff and we need you guys to put it together in a way that's cheaper and more efficient than the guy we voted against, essentially. And it's not just fighting back and forth over God knows what. I mean, it's most of it is there for a purpose, right? And you're our voice on that side of it. That, you know, no matter how much you guys bitch at each other, God bless you, still need water when you turn on the tap, right?
Yeah, let's spend a little less time on the Epstein files and let's work on stuff like this.
Well, you know, I don't know if you've been listening, Bill, but that has caught people, and I've tried to have a bunch of shows on it. And when I say a bunch of shows on it, the onion is every time you peel it back, you get somewhere else. And the idea that somebody did something like that is kind of appalling to me. But you know what? I'm not going to chase my day worrying about it. But if the same people and the same banks that gave us the fiasco of Iran-Contra are still around and still in business, you know what? I got a problem with that. And I don't know how you ferret out something that becomes... I mean, you and I had one day, we talked years and years ago about when the first time I read the book, Man Called Intrepid, this had to be decades ago, or talk about, you know, the British Secret Service and the people here, the guys who ran them were so above reproach, and they made deals with, you know, a lot of people that maybe were so unsavory. Well, evidently, according to some people, those people are gone. The deals are sort of still there, You know, and who I mean, it appears to me that somebody rigged this whole thing with Epstein and all this stuff to get the goods on a lot of people. Now, the people should have had intelligence to not use their own damn phone going from island to island. I guess I'm not all that worried about them. But the people who seemingly have the balls and the wherewithal to try and, you know, shall we say, put people in a bad position, the Denny Hastert's of the world, maybe the Bill Clintons of the world, certainly the Arab people. I don't want those people around. We're never going to get to them, but it makes me nervous that they're still here. And this, I mean, Wayne and Andrew last week, the same banks that were using to launder this money were the banks that were using Iran-Contra. Bill, how the hell can they still be alive? I mean, this is the stuff I worry about. I mean, the fact that Epstein was a creep, you know, you're right. I mean, at some point, you got to not forget it, but get over it. Not get over, I don't know what the term is, but get beyond it. But if the other people that put the whole thing together are still out there live and ticking, I got a problem with that, don't you?
Totally.
But I don't know how you get there. I mean, you almost need a secret police to go after your own secret police or something. I mean,
right.
I mean, right? I mean, I wouldn't want to do it, would you?
No.
Yeah, I wouldn't mind if somebody did it. And if there's five people, the men behind the curtain, I mean, how many times does everybody in the show talk about who's really in charge? Maybe it's these people, whoever the hell they are. That would be scary, wouldn't it?
It would.
Anyway, but how's your golf game?
I hit him straight. That's all I can say.
Remember the two ladies from, well, you didn't Caddy Ridge, you were at Beverly, the one who was a former pro and then the doctor, Dr. Town, and the lady's name was Van Wee. They would run around in their cart in like 2 hours and 10 minutes. They just hit it straight.
My kind of people.
Yeah, they just hit it straight, hopped out, hit the next one, went to the green, put in back in the cart, and gone. The guy who used to chase the cart had to be like a marathon runner.
Right.
Anyway, Bill, thank you very much. I assume we're going to go for a real quick break. I assume we have Russell, don't we, Andrew?
Yep, we do.
All right, S&P Futures up 9, NASDAQ is up 28. 30-second break. We'll be right back. Stocks and Jacks.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. I think most of you know that I'm also the Chief Investment Officer at PTI Securities and Futures. There we invest for and help a wide variety of clients. And you know what? No two are the same. Some have legacy stocks, some concentration issues, some maybe embedded tax issues. The others might need or want some portfolio protection. There could be estate issues or maybe new family members. The point is that we are all unique and the portfolios should match. However, the last several years have seen a relatively one-way market. It seemed that all we needed was to be all in. No protection, no fixed income, just be all in, no matter who you are, what your risk profile or age. Most management firms love that. Take this and like it, no matter who you are. Be careful with that. You are not everybody. I think most see the market view going forward as maybe different than the one looking back, so your portfolio should reflect that. Maybe it's just as simple as your life station has changed. Towards that end, we are accepting some new clients needing a more personal approach and are interested in negotiating the future and not with a portfolio designed for the past. Find me at 312-663-4310. That's 312-663-4310.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Something happening here. What it is.
Loading up Stocks and Jocks. I'm tomorrow. Andrew on the board. SP Futures up 9. NASDAQ Futures up 24. Not much happening. We'll do a full break at the half hour. Professor Russell, how are you, bud? I assume he's there somewhere. Russell? Unmute thyself. Andrew, who do we have? Anybody?
Yeah, it looks like just Russell right now, but yeah, he's still muted at the moment.
My phone is misbehaving.
Uh-oh. There we go. I hate it when that happens.
It's making me hit a button every time I want to talk. This is going to be a lot of work.
Maybe you're...
George Jetson's job was to push 4 buttons a year, and he got $3 million a year for that.
And he had
that's 1,000 years in the future.
God. you're not a... Are you at home or are you at university?
No. I'm down in Indiana. We're getting oriented this week.
It's always a beautiful thing being oriented.
Yeah, and Dr. Adeniak, I can now actually say it publicly. She joined us a couple of weeks ago. She's actually a trader now, and she'll be working at Purdue starting this school year. And we'll have her back on a couple of, because there's some things that she and I are working on that we're going to want to talk to you about.
Well, cool. There's more, I'm going to lob this one out there. There's more cooperation than animosity between UI and Purdue, correct?
There's a lot, and this is the ultimate stocks and jocks crossover here. A lot of people don't realize that the Big Ten was started as an academic group. And it was started as the American Association of Universities. And to be an AAU school, you got to be a top, you got to be a top research school and meet a lot of other criteria. There's only about 65 or 70 of those schools now. Every single Big Ten school, when they became a Big Ten school, was an AAU school. So when you hear people talk about conference realignment and who might join the Big Ten, the first thing you got to do is see if they're an AAU school, because we all work together research-wise. She can walk in the Indiana Library and do whatever she wants. I can walk in the Purdue Library. I can walk in the University of Washington Library.
Russell, so
just to expand on what you said, there's a lot of cooperation between Big Ten schools. Beyond, and it goes well beyond the, I would not say that about the other big conference. They're not as interested in the academic stuff as we are.
I think there's a real lot of cooperation between the Irish and like Michigan and Purdue. I don't know about
Is. Oh, yeah. And I would throw, I actually, in that pool of schools that work closely together, heck yeah, with Notre Dame.
What is the is there any
and that's actually why I think Notre Dame would end up, if they do join a conference, they'd join us and not the SEC academic stuff.
I would agree. Is there any connection between the AAU stuff you're talking about and the land grant universities? The land grant
it's not because the there are some private schools in the AAU, like in fact my daughter's school was the most recent, George Washington. So, you know what? I teach at an AAU school, and both of my daughters go to AAU schools.
What was the original premise of the...
The original was, and this is why University of Chicago used to be in the Big Ten.
But now,
They started it with Michigan State, Illinois. There was only six schools that started it, and then they expanded out. But that they were all... The Big Ten was as much of an academic group as an athletic group. Probably more an academic group than an athletic group.
Well, I don't think Northwestern was, but aren't all the
They were not an original, no.
But aren't all the rest land-grant universities? And that was, in order for the land, I think you had a...
Yeah, I would think so. I don't think that's a criteria for being an AAU school.
No.
It's because that's more about... And then the other thing is the AAU schools really do get a big portion of federal funding.
Well, now, I think I went through this once because I actually was asking you about it and I wanted to learn something.
Yeah,
I'm
very proud of working at an AAU school. That's why I probably have brought it up before.
But the property, hence the name land grant,
yeah,
like Illinois and Indiana are sitting on, I think those were federal grants. And it was done in a way where, because I think there were still territory. I'm not positive on this, but the idea was they wanted places to do research for agriculture and other stuff. But agriculture was a big part of it, right? So you're going to see places like Wisconsin, Iowa, Indiana, Illinois. They still do a boatload of stuff for agriculture, correct? I mean, even
right
and
right. Dr. Demiak's kid, one of her kids, is actually very interested in farming, and he's years away from school or from college, but that Purdue is all over agriculture.
Well, so is Illinois, obviously. Minnesota.
Yeah, so is Illinois. I mean, yeah, but I'd say Purdue is stronger at that than Indiana is.
Okay.
Yeah, that's what I kind of mean by that.
What did you make of conversation with Bill regarding, underneath the hurling turds at each other politics, there's this massive amount of projects underway and problems with population growth and water and sewage and all that stuff somehow has to be taken care of and sorted out. And,
yeah, and how are we going to do that if we're you know, fighting, as opposed to at least letting somebody try something?
What do you think about? And I've heard the part about the original, you know, surface transportation thing in Austin was $4 billion, and everybody voted for it. Then they went back and checked the numbers; it was more like 12, and then they voted it down or something. I never heard of that before. That's wild, huh?
That sounds like that. That makes a lot of sense, but it sounds to me like they voted for something and then they read it after they voted for it.
Yeah,
which apparently happens a lot. You know, like you got to pass it to find out what's in it.
Well, coming from Chicago, and the one thing you I mean, obviously you have issues in Chicago, but the one thing you never ever even questioned when you turned on the tap, outflowed pretty good water. Right, you never even was something. You know, all you got to do is look to the east, and you see this damn near an ocean sitting there. And yet, everybody I've ever known from my college years or high school with Bill, that moved west or moved south, all of a sudden water is somewhere between 10% and 90% of the conversation, and it just isn't even a topic here. I mean, one of my buddies who went to Colorado, actually worked for NOAA, retired from NOAA. It's an interesting dude, Russell. He was one of the guys in the DC-8s. Was charting the ozone holes all those years.
Oh, fine.
And then he did a worldwide study. He was part of a group that did a worldwide study of oxygen, you know, pluses and minuses in the environment. And kind of an interesting little story. He goes, everybody's convinced that, you know, the Amazon just belches out nothing but oxygen. And he says, it's totally untrue. He said, for every place eventually makes it to equilibrium. So however many trees are belching out oxygen, because obviously people don't know that the trees take carbon dioxide and make oxygen, and and he says there's a tree on the ground with 90 bazillion termites and they're eating the thing up, creating carbon dioxide. So if you go across the Amazon, it's fairly neutral. He said the biggest oxygen bloom they had, where all the needles, they thought something was wrong, was they flew over Yellowstone about 5 or 6 years after that massive fire, where it was all new growth. Said it was nothing but oxygen. it was all new stuff growing. There was nothing decaying. All that was over. So the amount of oxygen pouring out of that area was dramatic. Anyway, but those are the kind of stuff.
And that's you know, like a solution to some of the problems we have.
Well, he was on. I think he might have been on the show. And I said, what's the easiest solution to, you know, the carbon stuff? He goes, plant a million trees. Simple as that.
Yeah.
But he was telling me that out there you have water rights. But if you have water rights to a stream, not only do you get the water from the stream, you get to hang like a, you know, theoretically, you could hang a clothesline across the thing, and people can't even go down your stream. You could shoot it. Well, you couldn't shoot at it, but you could overturn people's canoes.
It's like going to your backyard.
Yeah, and in Arizona, one of my original clients was talking about it's when you see a golf course out there, and you'll see, you know, something might be a Russell Ranch golf course, and it looks a little bit like a golf course here. Well, that's because the ranch had water rights that were now bought by the golf course. But whenever you see one that's like, it looks like Target Golf, where the tee's green and then the fairway's got a spot that's green and all the rest of it looks like desert. Those are guys who don't have anywhere near the water rights. So they can only have enough for just a certain areas of grass, and the rest of it's still desert.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, it's a whole different, you know, brand.
Oh, yeah.
And I
grew up, Memphis is on a giant aquifer. You know, I heard you guys talking about that part. And so I grew up in a place where, like, I think they actually had a plan to bottle it at one time and sell it. Because it's that, you know, purified or whatever, because it's my understanding was the water that got to me had basically gone through the ground for a couple of hundred years before it reached the aquifer that was under Memphis. But I do wonder, you know, if that thing is unlimited or not, and that would be a hell of a thing to try and replenish, I'm sure.
Well, like Bill said, he is, you know, one guy goes 100 feet, everything's fine, the next guy goes 125, and all of a sudden there's a million guys at 200, you got to keep going lower every year, till finally the water's no good.
It's just not there anymore. And, you know, Michael Burry, the guy that made a lot of money off of the housing crisis, he's the one that's like pseudo blind playing the drum in the movies. His big theme for some time now has been water. You know, invest in water, et cetera, because of the scarcity that we're going to be experiencing. So I wonder, when I heard you guys talking about water, I wondered if that was the part of the direction that you guys were going to be going with it, because there is only so much of it in the world, and you know there are too many people right now.
Well, I mean, what Bill was, yeah, three or four times ago, I'd sent him, I'd seen something on YouTube, some big assessment of when they had the fires in L.A. and not enough water and all this kind of crap, and he was talking about this report. And he says California actually does get enough rainfall. It's a question of gathering it up and saving it for the dry times of the year. I mean, if you look at the rainfall they get, there's kind of plenty. And most of it goes to agriculture. Because, yeah, I mean, if they didn't grow stuff out there, I mean, that's the economy. I mean, it's not, everybody thinks it's movies, but it's really agriculture, right? And it's all about managing all this stuff and gathering it up. And now, granted, more and more people you get, the more difficult that gets. But right now, however many bazillion board, you know, acre feet of water they get is enough for the population. If it's, you know, some of it's going to run off, some of it's going to do this, but it's pretty an amazing choreography what these guys do. And I just, my reason for talking to him this morning, well, one, Kevin's a little under the weather, but still, when you in the midst of all the politics and the mudslinging and people, you know, sitting on their computers all day long or their phones insulting people and X and so forth. Fact is, 90% of what the government does is necessary stuff. I mean, I've had people, you know, after, you know, two beers go, oh, we got rid of this Federal Reserve, they all suck. Well, wait. 95% of what they do, if you write a check or you Zelle something, it's not going to go anywhere without the Federal Reserve. Nobody even knows what they do. I mean, there's a reason why there's a local school council, there's why there's a local government. There are actual real problems that people deal with. Somehow, do we even recognize it anymore, Russell?
No, I don't think we do. We focus in on the stuff. We focus in on the disagreements and the things that you know we automatically disagree with, that the people that we don't like have come up with, and that which means, and sometimes it's okay that not a whole lot gets done as far as new stuff goes, and it just allows the government to keep concentrating on the things that they're supposed to do for us. And I'm very aware of that we do need government for certain things. And I was on a school board for 4 years, and I went through a contract negotiation with the teachers. I was on the school board right after the great financial crisis, where we had to, you know, deal with lower tax revenues and figure out what to do around that. There were a lot of things that, you know, that we were needed for. And if you didn't have, you know, and we were the oversight of the people that got hired, much like a board of directors, you know, that is very much of a needed function. And I think it's a needed function that people who are willing to give up a few years and some of their time and have an interest in making sure things keep running. That's the kind of government that you want. That's the kind of government that I think was envisioned for all of us. And that ain't what we got anymore. And just like anything else, the reason that ain't what we got anymore is money.
Well, I think some of it is.
Period. I mean, college sports sucks now because of money.
Yeah. Well, how much?
You know, and Major League Baseball is completely going downhill because of money. You know, it's just, and I say that because they got to try to figure out how to pay players without a salary cap, and it's catching up with them. It really is catching up with them on a business side of things. But just, it really, you know, you say you want to peel back over and over again. I'm going to ruin the peeling back. It's all, everything is about money. That's just what it eventually comes down to.
Well, at some levels of government, it's a lot of it's power and influence, which is the same as money in a lot of ways.
Oh yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, you know, I think it's funny now that she's amassed $400 million in fortune trading stocks that she's okay with that Pelosi's okay with doing away with the stock thing, or making it where Congress can't. She's actually supporting Congress not being able to trade stocks now.
Well, I would,
but you can't tell me that, you know, that I mean, we had a Congress, we had a congressperson, I can't remember their name, from out from the Hinsdale area, that that my mother-in-law voted for. This was before I had moved out to Hinsdale. And my mother-in-law stopped voting for her. And the reason she stopped voting for her was because the woman had said, well, I'll only do this like 6 years or something along those lines. And she ended up, you know, not holding up to that. And she said, this woman said she wasn't going to, you know, wasn't going to stay in office. She keeps staying in office. And I, you know, and so I'm not voting for her because she lied about that part of it. But you got to assume you get into office and you start to see all these cool perks and you see a way to enrich yourself a bit, et cetera. And it's very difficult to give that up.
Well, that's one, you know, well, it's, I mean, one, it's, I, one, I, side, it's one side, it's one side of the trade.
You know, I joined the school board and, or I got elected to the school board and I fully intended to only do it for 4 years. I wish I'd only done it for a week. It was one of the most awful experiences of my life. No, really, it was.
I know you've told it.
It was the number one worst experience of my life. There, on so many levels, the teachers were so crappy to my kids. We had to pull them out and put them into private schools.
Well,
it cost me money to be on the school board. So, you know, when the teacher started mistreating my kids, I should have quit. I should have said, yeah, you know what, that's enough. But if I'd been on the school board, I have a cousin down in Louisiana who's, an aspiring politician who's come in like third a bunch of times running for a House seat. He's one of these guys that tries to, you know, act like he knows everything about everything. And he told me that I was on the school board because I got free health care.
Did you?
We don't get that.
I'm going to say
in Louisiana, school board members get free health care. So they have a whole bunch of old people that run for school board just so they can have the health care. They could care less about the schools.
Well, I...
Disincentives right there. But so, you know, that the composition of their school boards are, it's the same people forever and ever and ever because of name recognition, and they're doing it for greedy purposes, not to make the community a better place, which was kind of my intent when I did it.
Well, I think there's people that just kind of land, but my experience, I want to talk about these markets here after the break, but my experience on the CBOE board is, no, I was very involved because I was still trading and I had a bunch of people working for me, so my livelihood was in the place, and as was, you know, 10 people were trading for me. I was on two terms. I would say I accomplished twice as much, at least, my second term, and probably 50% of that was in the last year. I mean, you do gain a certain amount of knowledge, and especially, you can't be in a position where the staff can just outweigh the people on the board, to where it'll be 2 years and they're a little bit of a rabble rouser. Let's just not pay attention to them when they're gone. So there's a fine line between somebody like learning what's going on, which takes you a while, and being tossed off. I mean, a lady that I talked to in Indiana, your favorite adopted state. She was a state, I'm not sure, Russell, she was a state rep or state senator, one of the two. She was from Ogden Dunes or Portage. And one night the music was so loud, I said, I can't handle it. I walked outside, and sure enough, she's sitting there. She said, hey, sit down. God, she couldn't have been, God, Russell, she was 5 foot on a good day, but just a terrific lady. And we talked, and she goes, you know, I was on, she's just a regular person. And she'd been many terms, and then she retired. And she says, you know, my first few terms, they had me on the medical board. She goes, it took me so much study to understand how everybody gets paid, how the state money goes, how the Medicaid money goes. She goes, it was a massive education to where I was able to bring stuff to the meeting. I just didn't walk into my first meeting and contribute. It took like a couple of years at least to really get a handle on all this stuff. It was like a whole education in it. And then after three terms when I was doing that, they said, hey, you're doing a good job here, but guess what? There's an opening in the transportation board, and we really want you because you do, like, a good job and blah, blah, blah. So she goes, that was like another couple of years to know how all these contracts are written. She goes, we got like hundreds of contracts, the whole state that we're financing. And I I got to read like half of them to find out which ones were good and which ones were bad. So, I mean, if you really apply yourself, you can't just say, well, after 2 years, get them the hell out of there. I mean, you at the same token, you don't want somebody sitting there doing nothing for 30 years either. So, I mean, I don't know how you – it's an individual thing is what I'm saying. I mean,
it's most definitely an individual thing, but I do think that we need some sort of term limits or something.
But how do you
or just make it where, you know, getting elected to Congress is not a way that you can make yourself a zillionaire.
Well, let's talk about that a little bit after the break. I think they're during the break. Because we had a few people on the show, regulars, that talk about that, and it seems to me that everybody talks about there's no turnover. I'll bet you a spiced coffee that there's more turnover now than there ever has been. But it's in the first few years.
Yeah, but it's like a barbell.
No, but it's in the first like few years, and then somewhere like along the line, people either dive in. Or this is my opinion, so grade me after the break. My opinion is at some point you cave in to the people shoving money in your pocket and you join the cool guys, essentially on both sides of the aisle. Because as much as they'll bitch at each other, they'll never complain about each one getting money. I mean, so there's an amazing camaraderie in at least that regard. And somehow or another, we have all kinds of really good people, I think, serving one or two terms and can't wait to get the hell out of there, and then you have people that are there because somehow they're tied into the pharmaceutical people or somebody. And I think it ends up being like the worst of all worlds, because you and I may send somebody there, you and I from our district, if we're in the same district, might send somebody there, think that they're like a real representative. They aren't worth spit their first two years. They're lucky if they get a committee. The question is, the stratification of the people in the House, I don't think that's part of the Constitution at all. Is that being that all of a sudden my guy's worth 15 committee appointments and $90 bazillion, and your guy ain't worse crap. I mean, SP Futures up 8, and as of 26, be right back, Stacks and Jacks.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you're aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed-income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. At PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to ptisecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's ptisecurities.com.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here.
Hello, North Bay Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Howe, Andrew on the board. SP Futures up 11. NASDAQ Futures up 39. It's after a down day yesterday. We were up most of the day, and then we slid in the afternoon. Dow Futures up 132. A lot of that's because of McDonald's, up $12. That's 4%. They came out with strong sales, which I think people weren't expecting. But a lot of that they claim was from special deals and so forth. But whatever it was, the sales came out better than people thought. We're in Europe. We've got the Trump has threatened a 250% tariff on pharma stuff, but so the DAX says European pharma stocks lose ground. The DAX up 9, call that flat. FTSE up 20.2%, CAC around up 16.2%, so they're up a little bit, but barely. Over in Asia, we've got the Nikkei up 245.6%, the Hang Seng up 8, call that flat. Shanghai up 16, which has been pretty buoyant lately. They hadn't moved forever. Now they're moving up over in the Shanghai. It's 0.4%. Bonds, the 10-year is up 3 basis points, 4.22. The Bund up 1 basis point, 2.63. Oil, which has been dancing around, it went south after Saudi said that they're OPEC, said they're going to add another 400,000 barrels a day. Well, actually, it's rebounding a little bit here, up 81 cents, 65.97. this guy's in every freaking sentence. Oil prices rebound from five-week low on Trump threats on oil Russian crude buyers. So every move on any of these markets today, these days, is somehow some utterance out of the White House. I don't know how healthy that is. I'm going to say not, but it's up to you to decide. Gold up down 15. It's had a big run yesterday. Silver down 2 cents again at a big run yesterday. Copper up 4 cents, 442. Foreign exchange. The dollar has been low, but it has been real strong. But the euro's back over 116 a little bit. British pound up 133. So the dollar is still in a strong spot compared to a few weeks ago. Crypto, this stuff has been getting clobbered, but now it's up 652 to 114 today on Bitcoin. Andrew, what do you got for us? Traffic, weather, sports. What a Cubs. They suck.
All right. Yeah, that's what I was going to say. It's August 6th here in Chicago. And 7:36. Yet, no wins from our favorite teams today. The Cubs lost to the Reds 5-1. The White Sox lost to the Mariners 8-3. And the Diamondbacks lost to the Padres 10-5. Chicago weather is looking at least a little better today. It is currently 73 degrees right now. We're going to have a high of 84. Going to stay mostly sunny. We are going to have some humidity throughout the day. Over in Phoenix, they're currently at 91 degrees. Things are going to rise, and looks like it is going to hit record-breaking temperatures. Might be a high of 117 later today. And finally, for Chicago traffic...
It's pretty hot.
Yeah, it's not looking good, and honestly, the Chicago traffic ain't either. It's... basically pretty heavy on the inbound from every direction. I believe if you're coming in from the Kennedy, it's going to be especially slow, as we saw ourselves this morning. But no, thankfully, no major accidents to report. So that's all I got. Back to you, Chief.
Russell, just a sort of a quick story. I mean, everybody had his parents, and I had a stepfather who was a little...
One thing real quick.
What?
Are you there?
I'm here.
You're gonna let... Okay. Yeah, the thing that you said about the headline and Trump, I was at a conference where they were showing language processing stuff, like just how you can break down articles, etc. And Trump's name appears like 8 times more often than Biden's did in any story about the economy. And we were having a discussion afterwards about that stat. And we don't know if it's because everything he's doing is affecting everything, or just because everybody is so fixated on him. We couldn't figure out which one. You know, it was like a debate over cocktails at the end of the presentation. So sorry to, I know you wanted to go into
no, I was going to say, but how can you?
You made that comment, man. So
well, as you stare in front of the screen,
yeah,
all day and manage money for people, which is my job to watch this crap every hour. There's some utterance out of it. Not somebody writing about it. Him.
Yeah. Well, if OPEC decides they're going to do something around oil, and it's something that they've been arbitrarily deciding, you're finding that reporters will throw in their, you know, it likely in response to Trump, blah, 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 or something. They just seem to want to include him. And I don't know if it's clickbait to get attention or he's just...
Well, the day before... Yeah,
you know what? He is most definitely more animated and active than our former president.
Well, I mean, is this what you want in a president? Every hour
no,
coming up
with... No, I don't. But also, I don't know if... You know, I know. I don't.
Well, how,
I really,
how can,
I don't.
How can you... You have to be the world's dumbest newspaper, man, and there's a lot of them out there, I think, to not connect the OPEC Plus thing announcement with the day or two before saying he's going to put massive tariffs on people that are importing Russian oil. There's got to be some. You at least have to mention whether or not there's a connection is up for the listener to decide. But how do you not mention the both of them?
I'm just saying that it just seems a bit extreme how often he's noted with just respect to everything that seems to be going on in the world.
You've been doing this show with me for a while. When's the last time? Well, we haven't had many presidents ago because he was one of them.
Yeah.
By the time we start the show at 6 o'clock, the guy's already got 2 announcements out there.
I know.
Anyway, what I was saying is,
I guess the
question I'm asking, and I, you know, your opinion, you get around more than I do, let's put it that way.
Yep.
My stepfather was kind of an odd duck in a lot of ways, but he also was very effective in a lot of ways. And one of the things, mm-hmm. when he worked, he told me, you know, there's some things, even though we never really got along all that much, He said when he was in the Army, he said it was an amazing thing because you learned how to get along with people for the purposes of getting stuff done that maybe you never would like and never have a beer with. But you have to work together because that was the job. And way back before anybody was worried about hiring minorities or anything like that, if you walked into his accounting department, he was a controller, and back then everybody didn't have a computer or sitting there with adding machines and so forth, you know, his accounting department might be 12 people, you know, which maybe now an accounting department doesn't have to be that many. But if you walked in there, even as a kid, I noticed, wait a minute, two of these people look like they're Indian, a couple look like they're Chinese, a couple look like they're black, because probably they are. And you know what? He didn't care. If you're going to be here, you're going to here's the job. You're going to get along with people when you're here. I don't care what church you go to on Sunday. Leave that out of the mix. Let's just do a good job here. And you know what? He was amazingly effective at that. And even though he was kind of a grumpy dude, here was the story. We're going to get along. We're going to get the job done. And you know, if you want to, you know, throw baseballs at each other's head on Sunday, that's your problem, type of thing. And I think we sort of have lost some of that. I don't know that the people who fight back and forth seriously on TV are capable of getting in a room on the same committee, forget all that, and talk about the water treatment plant in normal terms and actually forget the other stuff. And now we got a project. We both want water when we turn, you know, the faucet on. I don't think I get the feeling that these people can't forget the partisan crap and stuff in time to get the job done. It seems like it's deeper than that. Or am I just off on this?
No, it feels deeper than that. It feels different. It just feels like it's a direction that we've been going. It just feels like it's a direction that we've been going ever since we lost Reagan, I guess. He seemed to, even toward the end of his second, you know, with the Iran-Contra stuff, there started to be a division, and goodness knows he was really vilified by a lot of people, even when he died, which I was kind of shocked at. But yeah, it just feels like we've, you know, you're on one side or the other, and if you're in the middle, I was doing an interview yesterday, and we were talking a little bit about politics, and it was kind of off the record. And I was just being neutral like I always am. And I could tell the reporter was getting pissy with me. I don't even remember exactly what it was I said. But I kind of just discounted something about, I was discounting the rhetoric that Trump's doing toward Powell. I just, you know, I said, he really can't impact that. I said, Powell, it's just noise to him. And I was saying things like that, but I wouldn't, you know, wouldn't jump all over Trump should shut his mouth, da da da. I was just like, it's rhetoric. I just don't even listen to it that much, and it doesn't impact what I think is going to happen next around rates, and I don't think it impacts what Powell's going to do next around rates. But the guy was, you could tell he was really hoping to get, you know, some sort of, you know, Trump's the biggest piece of most evil person in the world. He needs to shut the hell up.
Well, I'm not going to say that. The interesting, I was listening, you know, I go through the YouTube, and I like to listen to both sides in the sense that even if the person seems like they're so partisan, somewhere in the 5-minute thing, there might be a fact or something that they stumbled upon that you didn't hear it somewhere else. So actually, you can learn even from, you know, people that are goofballs. And well, Trump's niece was on one of them. She hates Trump. But she was talking about how when he was young in New York, his entire direction was he wanted to be part of the in crowd in New York, and they never liked him. But now he's managed to lob into this total change to where he has a group of admirers, a lot of people, she says, that absolutely don't seem to like anybody. And the more he insults people, the more they choose him, the more they love it. In fact, you know, he calls people stupid. She goes, nobody's ever done that before. Yet there's people that absolutely love it. She goes, nobody would have thought that we would have, I'm not talking about the policies versus Democrats, you know, stuff. She goes, nobody would have thought in America that we would have people that actually cheer that stuff. But maybe the economy, maybe stuff that's happened, maybe some people having all the money and not the other people. Somehow people have gotten so disillusioned to where they actually love it. And she goes, I can't imagine when I was a kid that anybody could have gotten away with that without being thrown off the stage. But now, people, it's, she goes, it's a total change that you can actually get the power by insulting people. She goes, there's no real and telling people you hate people. She goes, but it's, you can't say that it hasn't been effective, because it sure as hell has. It is really bizarre to me when you think about it. But the thing with Powell is, he's actually pouring way more money in the system. To me, the things Trump's criticizing about, I would criticize him from the other way. He hasn't fought inflation the entire time he's been there. He's created inflation. And right now he's creating it even more. Right? I mean, I can't believe in today's world we're having a 7% money supply growth last month. I mean, Russell, to me, that's borderline incompetence. And he's doing exactly what Trump wants him to do.
He is doing exactly. And you know, here's the best, and here's what I tried to get into the article, but it didn't make it. Why, you know, Trump had an absolute meltdown on the most recent non-farm payrolls number. The non-farm payrolls number made the odds of a Fed cut in September, made it run up to 90% from around 45%. It basically effectively got what he wanted. So if there were, you know, if anybody was really manipulating that number, you would be manipulating and you wanted to do it to the, you know, and you wanted to do it to upset the president, you would have made it a strong number, not a weak one.
Well, you don't expect him to under... You know, I saw him.
I don't expect him to understand that, and I think it was kind of glaring that, you know, that he went off on the way that he went off.
Well, did you listen to him? I didn't. I was doing the show. Sure. Did you listen to his interview on CNBC yesterday?
No. Oh, I was. Okay. I was in orientation all day.
You got to listen to part of it.
I was sequestered.
I have never. Well, saying that for a long time with him and other politicians, but. I have never heard of an interview anywhere like that. He started. Mm-hmm. He started calling out Moynihan's. He's the head of Bank of America, and then and the guy who's head of Chase, Jamie Dimon. He started talking about how they were basically willing to kiss his ass when he was president, and as soon as he got out, he called Moynihan for a loan. And even though he kept saying millions and millions, and even slipped in a billion. He had billions of dollars in cash at Bank of America. Moynihan would not give him a loan and didn't want to talk to him. Of course, the guy was on trial for three different things, but I'm not saying that was the reason. But he's calling these banks out that they wouldn't give him personally a loan. Have you ever heard of a president or a senator doing that before? Why do people think that's appropriate?
Well, why would it be appropriate that, you know, I'd love to know the circumstances, but why would it be appropriate that they, you know, shot him down?
How do you even know they did?
How do we know that that's true too? But and these guys dealt with Epstein.
but do you think
and Epstein did get convicted once before, you know, the second go round. So
sort of.
It's not, but it's not like people didn't know he was a scumbag at that point.
Did you hear?
The only real excuse I could give it that I could see is. You're under felony charges right now, and we're not sure where that's going to go. And we consider you that would be a consideration of a pretty high risk. He's also had a massive sexual harassment judgment against him.
But he also
had
how many bankruptcies?
Yeah. So, why would you lend money to him? I mean, I don't think not having money lent to him had anything to do with him having not been president anymore.
Well, I'll make a small bet that if he in fact had millions and hundreds of millions of dollars on deposit in the bank, which I will absolutely dispute, if that's the case, I'm going to bet you that the loan he wanted was not going to be guaranteed by those millions of dollars in the bank.
Oh gosh, no, it wasn't backed by that.
Yeah. So anyway, I just. Yes. But here's a good one. Now, if Powell, now this lady just resigned from the Fed, and my brother claims that she's sick or something, whatever, but she's resigned, whatever reason. And so now Trump gets to put somebody on there, which is appropriate, which is perfectly supposed to happen.
But now
he's talking about other people being on the Fed. But even though Powell's term as chairman ends in January, his term on the Fed does not end to January of 2028. So if he doesn't resign, Trump has to pick somebody from on the board, which he has one or two of his appointees on there. But it's not a given that Powell's going to resign, is it?
I don't think it's a given, but
they usually do, I think.
Yeah, they traditionally do, but a common friend of ours bumped into him a couple of weeks ago at an airport and said he looks terrible.
Oh, he does.
Yeah, and so and that, you know, I'm saying this in a very, I'm not criticizing, nothing else. It's just looking at him, I would assume that he's ready for a break.
He's got to be down 20 pounds, easy.
Yeah, he and MK mentioned it to me. You know, just mentioned that to a group there. He said, "I just saw Powell at the airport. Man, he looks terrible." And so I kind of paid. I always watch the press conference, and I watch it word for word because I don't want any of that to get filtered when it gets to me. I want to see exactly what his mannerisms are, how he says things. And I toast to him every time he talks about the dual mandate, because I feel like people forget what the dual mandate is, and forget what they're really supposed to be doing, even if he's not 100% focused on the dual mandate. But I like how he brings it up and refers back to it and everything that he does.
So you don't believe like I do that the third mandate is to keep the bubble going.
I think the third mandate is to keep a lot of really rich people happy.
Yep.
And, how's that?
I think that's clearly. But this is, we have a few minutes and we can run over a few because we started a few minutes late. Mm-hmm. We've talked this week. You know, Carl was brought up, and he, to his credit, well, Carl gets a lot of credit. He has been talking about a general degradation in the labor numbers now for months.
Oh yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
I mean, if you look in the back page,
this is nothing new.
Yeah, and he
with the uncertainty. But go ahead, sorry.
No, I'm saying, but he, and then that served the thing that turned the market down yesterday. Well, was coincidental with the market turning. You never can say if something was a cause and effect. Was a bad service number, right? The service index or something came in lousy.
Yeah, the PMI services was a little light, but it wasn't terrible.
Well, but you're looking
it wasn't as dramatically bad as last Friday's number.
No,
but it's in the same direction as last Friday.
But everything seems to be sort of heading that and has been doing that for a while. And I sent you guys the article about how this has been like the worst year for hiring for college graduates in like a long time. Talk about it.
See, I find, you know what, I don't agree with that. What I'm seeing at my level is that college graduates, a lot of them are very picky as to what they were willing to do. AES down here, the power company, they need four entry level, you know, financial analysts, and they're not finding anybody that
really,
you know, that they're happy with. Yeah, they said, "Can I find some students and recommend them directly?" They're just not finding what they're. So I wonder. And we, in our orientation, we just talked about, you know, the uniqueness of the generation that we're teaching at the undergraduate level right now, and a lot of them think they know everything already.
Oh yeah.
And nobody wants to hire anybody like that. That's really what it, you know, kind of the general thinking. And so what you have to do, and what they were talking to us about, is if you want to get feedback, you've got to make it in a way, or you want to get discussions going, you definitely have to make it in a way that you're not putting a spotlight on them and you're not calling them out for being wrong.
Well,
because they hate that. They absolutely hate that.
Well, because they checked it out on their phone, right? But Carl's been talking about the shrinkage in the hiring in the last several months has been in college educated people, which is a bad sign.
Oh yeah, there are a lot of bad signs.
But I'm saying it's in there. But it would seem like instead of denying it, you'd probably want to work to fix it. And the longer you deny it, the deeper it's going to get. But I guess what I'm trying to ask here is, there seems to be a little bit of a degradation. Like my nephew tells me that all of a sudden the people who do all the metalworking facilities here in the Chicago area, certainly in the South, that he knows a few of them, everybody's sort of run into a wall about 8 weeks ago, and nobody knows why. All of a sudden, nobody's working Saturdays, nobody's working the second shift, and you know, it just all happened all of a sudden to everybody. And I, you know, whether it's a summer thing, it's going to pick right back up, which it could, I hope. But it seems like there's a little anecdotal evidence, and yet you have individual stocks. You know, I've got Oracle is now higher revenue per share than they were in 2000 when they collapsed. Now, does that mean it's going to collapse tomorrow and I got puts on Oracle? No. If you have Oracle, should you sell it because I said that? No. But the point is, these numbers are getting sort of astronomical. At the same time, it looks like stuff's slowing down. Now, we went through a COVID situation, and people forget it was only 4 years ago. We were damn near in the depression, and yet we poured so much money in the system that the market went up. Does everybody think that no matter what happens, the Fed's going to rescue the market by putting more money in, and the people with assets are going to do fine? Is that are we at? Is that what the underpinning thought to all this is, Russell? Nobody, you could come out with the world's worst report, like last Friday, and the market goes down, and the next day it comes right back up. Does that mean?
Yeah, no, there's a belief that that lower rates are going to fix everything.
Why?
I don't agree with that, but that's the thinking. Although I think that is starting to disconnect, and the reason I think that's starting to disconnect was the price behavior last Friday, because last Friday the stock market took it on the chin a bit, and the odds of the Fed after Powell spoke last Wednesday, the odds went down to around 45%. That we were going to get a cut at the September meeting. And I think some of that was based on the CPI that day, and then some of it was just based on his comments. And then Friday, we got a really slow, you know, we get a really slow economic number, which the odds of the cut jumped right up to 90, which was, and it was higher, the odds of the cut were higher than they've, I think, been ever since they've had that meeting scheduled. Or at least for the past few months. But typically when that number goes up, the odds of a cut goes up, the stock market goes up too. And they went in opposite directions. So I am wondering if we're at some kind of weird inflection point where, you know, the stock market's going to start looking beyond or realizing that it's going to take more than just rate cuts to get the economy going. To rebound the economy, I guess.
I know you're a lot younger, and you didn't go through the same crap I did in the 70s. But why is it that nobody looks at the money stuff, and they focus on this interest rate stuff? Because he's already cut. The federal funds rate is down a quarter from when they last cut. It's all in the Right.
You know that, and I know that, but one of my former students that reached out to me about their mortgage rate yesterday doesn't know that.
I mean, we're down to
It's not. I mean, a lot of what they're doing isn't really getting to the consumer end.
Well, the Treasury rates are 4.38, so they're right in the middle of where the federal funds rate is. The federal funds rate is going to be a little lower than the Treasury rate, right? So the federal funds rate is already probably down overnight. I don't know anybody anymore I could call, but I bet the federal funds rate already is 4.1. So they already have why not say it? It's a bitch fight between him and Trump as to whether you're actually going to admit it. I mean, right now, I'll bet if I knew somebody that did the, I know one of the guys I used to be the guy who did it for Northern Trust. We used to be able to call them and say, what's the Fed funds rate? I'll bet the Fed funds rate is probably 4.1.
I'm trying to go through my Bloomberg right now on my phone.
But I mean, it's already down to where if he cuts at a quarter point, he's not cutting anything, is he?
Not really, no. No.
I mean, it's already there. Everybody's worried about this massive big announcement, and yet every day they tell you what they're doing.
And that's when I talk to the reporters about these things. That's what they're all excited about. They want, you know, like a clickbaity headline type of situation. The story I tell them is very different. That, you know, the financial markets already have a pretty good idea as to where rates are expected to be. And in fact, When you look at those forward rates based on the derivative market pricing, we've only the prediction was for about 3.2% Fed funds rate in December of 2026, and that's around 3.01 now. So with all the drama and everything, where we're going to ultimately get really hasn't changed that much. The timing around it's changed a little bit.
The only difference is they're totally forgetting, and we got a dash for us a little bit. Totally forgetting the part that if you start pouring more money in the rate and you actually start lowering the rate, I think the next calamity, I don't want to see it. The next calamity is going to be a CPI number that's like 1 or 1.2 per a month.
Yeah, that's I'm braced every. I buy daily. I buy 1 day puts whenever we get an inflation number.
Yeah, it's a.
I same thing with the employment number because I keep, they're relatively cheap when I'm wrong, but because I do believe that inflation's going to start poking its head back up.
Yeah, but I think it sort of already has. Anyway, so what? How long are you down there? You're down there for the week? Come back.
I'm down here through Thursday. It's just back to school week.
So what's your poor dog? Whose lap is he sitting in?
I thought we were losing him yesterday.
Really?
But it turned out we just medicated him up, and he's all back to fine. He'll be. We're getting a place where they allow dogs. He'll be hanging out with me down here.
Mm-hmm.
They banned dogs from the business school though. Which I was pretty bummed about.
What about if they're a therapy dog?
Well, you can do that, but. People were just bringing their buddies in, and somebody complained.
I had a class at St. Mary's College of all places in drama. I actually, believe it or not, I had like four classes in drama in college. I was never an actor, but I love reading plays.
Oh, you're an aspiring thespian.
No. I just like reading plays, and the guy who was the professor was drop dead brilliant, just the nicest guy. So, but one of the classes actually had a bunch of people who were actually in like the plays and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Talk about an odd group. And then there's me, the economics guy. But you know, we read all kinds of Roman and Greek plays and stuff. And so one lady said, "All right, what else to do?" She brought him to class. She had a little puppy, and he wandered around the whole class. Everybody was okay with it.
We have a professor here that would bring her French bulldog, and that's the one they got upset about. But I would babysit that one while she taught.
Well, this guy was about a solid 6 weeks old. Of course, he did the obligatory dump right in front of the room, but nobody cared. Anyway, take care of yourself.
He had an opinion.
He didn't like that play. S&P futures up 14. Nasdaq futures up 47. Back tomorrow, Stocks and Jocks.